Moin moin und herzlich willkommen zurück zu Next Doing Done, der Podcast rund ums gut miteinander arbeiten. Und bevor es in die heutige Folge geht, möchte ich noch einmal daran erinnern, dass am nächsten Donnerstag, also am 23.05. der Hamburg Innovation Summit in Hamburg stattfindet. Und zwar ist das eine Netzwerkveranstaltung und eine Expo und auch ein interaktives Zusammenkommen verschiedener Menschen, verschiedener Unternehmen, die sich rund um das Thema Innovation, New Work, Deep Tech beschäftigen, sich darum kümmern. Und genau, du kannst dort neben spannenden Vorträgen und einem Austausch mit eben diesen Personen quasi diese Innovationsszene kennenlernen und bietet neben diesem inspirierenden Konferenzcharakter eben auch einen Academy-Bereich, wo es darum geht, tatsächlich hands-on Workshops aktiv Sachen zu gestalten, neues Wissen zu erlernen. Und in diesem Academy-Bereich gibt es auch den Pitch Yourself und da geht es darum, dass sich verschiedene Startups vorstellen können, ihre Geschäftsmodell präsentieren können. Und ich habe die große Ehre, dort moderieren zu dürfen. Also, wenn ihr Interesse und Zeit habt, geht auf hamburg-innovation-summit.de und sichert euch noch eine der letzten Tickets. Ich würde mich freuen, wenn ihr am Start seid und wir uns dann dort einfach ein bisschen unterhalten können. Zur heutigen Folge. Wir haben diese Folge vor gut 5 Monaten aufgenommen, also kurz vor Weihnachten, kurz nach, ich glaube, es war sogar Nikolaus. Und zwar sprechen wir mit Brittany von der Agentur AJ & Smart, die sitzen in Berlin und vielleicht kennt der ein oder andere diese Agentur, die machen aus unserer Sicht extrem gutes Zeugs, haben sich darauf festgelegt, dass sie eine Agentur für Design Sprints sind und haben in vielen interessanten Lernmomenten gelernt, wie sie gut miteinander arbeiten. Und genau, Brittany ist eine von denen und mit denen haben wir uns unterhalten. Oder mit ihr haben wir uns unterhalten. Und das Ergebnis könnt ihr jetzt hören.
Moin zu Next Doing Done, der Podcast von Lasse Dirks und Tarek Garia. Wir setzen uns jeden Mittwoch zusammen und sprechen darüber, wie man gut miteinander arbeitet.
Okay, hello, and this is Next Thing Done, first time in English podcast, and we're here with Brittany from AJ and Smart.
Hello.
It's a pleasure to have you.
It's a pleasure to be here, guys. Thanks for having me.
You're sitting in Berlin, right?
I am, yes. Well, I'm actually standing
in Berlin. Oh, that's so healthy.
That was terrible. It was a terrible joke. I'm sorry.
I love it. I love it. How was your day?
Oh, it was a long day. I mean, it's just kind of, I feel like Christmas really crept up on me a little bit this year. So I'm kind of trying to get everything ready to go before I'm going back to Canada for a couple of weeks. So it's just been a bit hectic, but in a nice way. Like, it's all nice things. We've got like a few, like we have one of our founders is actually moving countries. Like, he's kind of going away for a few years. So we're having like a going away party for him. So we have to coordinate all these things, which sounds like unimportant stuff, but I think it's very important, you know, that people feel loved when they're leaving.
Yeah, definitely it is.
Yeah.
It's very, very, very important, especially if they are special people.
Exactly, especially as a founder. So I was doing a lot of that kind of stuff. And then we had, today was a user testing day. So the sprint team was doing like just, but like they had sprint, like basically tests lined up from the morning till they just finished now. So that was kind of going on as well, which is always fun.
All right. Okay. So much information and so such a short time.
Okay. So the founder of who is leaving?
Of AJ and Smart. Sorry. I work at AJ and Smart. We're a small product design studio. We're based here in Berlin. Our studio was founded by two guys. And one of them has a family and children. And so he is actually going back to Australia for a little while so that they can kind of, you know, have a few of their early years in like nature and friendly people.
I love it. I was once working with a guy who moved to New Zealand when he was 20, then lived there for 15 years, met a wife, then went back to Hamburg for, I think, his first child and then his second child. At some point, he said to the company, I have to go back to New Zealand. And literally, no one was, why?
Yeah,
everyone
exactly.
was like, go for it.
That's basically the feeling here as well. We're like, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. So. okay, and you're Whitney, and what is your role at AJ and Smart?
Yeah,
so especially because your signature doesn't get any hints.
That's right. I did that on purpose because the things that I do at AJ and Smart, like no one, there's no real job title that actually makes any sense. So my email signature is just, it's Brittany Bitch, which I mean, kind of explains it, so right? Crazy. Like I have my fingers, you know, my hands in quite a few, what do you say? Like pots or something? Like I'm doing quite a few things around AJ and Smart, but basically we do design sprints. So we're kind of like we're an agency that a lot of our customers, our clients use to get started in projects or use to kind of get a boost if a project is kind of feeling like it's dragging on or they can't make a proper decision. So we do design sprints. That's important to know. And we also educate whoever wants to learn about design sprints. So we have an online course, and then we also have a YouTube channel and Instagram and those kinds of things. So my like basic, like, I guess I could describe my job as, I'm like educating the online community about design sprints, about what we do.
So you're the perfect person to talk to.
Yeah.
Okay. And besides that, you're a comedian as well, right?
Ah, yes. I do stand-up comedy in Berlin. I mean, I've done it all, you know, also outside of Berlin. But I run a weekly open mic in Berlin Mitte. It's called Adorable Idiots, and it's a lot of fun if you're ever around on Sunday evenings. It's super, super fun. It's something that I started doing like 3 years ago. And I
want to go.
Yeah, you should come. It's so fun. It's happening this Sunday. We have a really good lineup.
This Sunday, I'm at the Lüneburger Heide.
Can we get some random, a huge amount of random puns, please, in this podcast episode?
I'll try. I love a good pun, but I wouldn't say that I'm the best at coming up with them. But we'll see. Okay. I'll try.
Fuck. okay, you can swear. You can swear as much as you want on
the
podcast.
Great.
Well, and recently you were at the Gary Vee 4D program, right?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. That was pretty crazy. It was, I mean, if anybody knows about like who Gary Vaynerchuk is, he's a pretty intense. Yeah. Are you a fan of his? Yeah.
I don't want to say fan, but I guess I'm a fan. I like to be entertained by him.
He is extremely entertaining. That's a really good point. Yeah. So he was in London doing his daily digital deep dive, which is the 4Ds. And me and my colleague got to go and participate. And it was pretty cool, actually. It was only one day. It was super intense. But you get to talk to, I mean, not only him, but all of his kind of like senior people in his agency as well about like what they're up to, kind of the trends that they're seeing going on. Just like you get really kind of, they walked us through like how they run their campaigns, how they, you know, deal with their clients, like all these kinds of things. It was quite cool and like very eye-opening for me.
I think I want to go a little bit back and zoom out and talk a little bit about AJ Smart and can you like give us and now I'm quoting the origin story. So you said that was founded by two guys.
Yeah.
I think there was one transition phase where they decided to take on the topic design sprints. Can you get a little bit into detail?
Yeah, so there's been several transition phases, if I'm being honest. The two guys who own AJ and Smart are Michael Smart, hence the Smart, and Jonathan Courtney. And then there was actually a third guy, but he kind of dropped out quite quickly. Like he kind of Yeah. So they were basically working as freelancers in product design, and they were working with a very big German client. And when they went to bill the client, the three of them, the client was like, oh no, like, you guys can't be freelancers. Like, we need to, you guys to be a company. Like, what are you talking about? And so the guys were just like, oh no, yeah, we're a company. Like, ha ha ha, you know, and then they like just made themselves a company. So that is literally the very start of AJ and Smart, which is, it makes a lot of sense for how we do things though, because we do, like, you know, we make decisions quite quickly. We kind of just roll with the punches and kind of, yeah, it's sort of very telling for how AJ and Smart functions today. So it's cool. Oh, and then your other question, sorry, about the second transition. So then AJ and Smart was a very small agency for quite a few years. And then it was maybe two and a half years ago, where basically what was happening was we were working with a lot of big clients, like on big retainers. And we were kind of getting a little bit like, just a little bit bored is maybe a little bit too strong of a word, but projects were taking a really long time. Everything was dragging on. We'd always start a project and be super excited, and the client would be really excited, and we'd be like, you guys are the best. And they'd be like, we love you. And then, you know, 6 months in, we were like, I don't want to talk to this person ever again in my life. You know? Okay. A dramatic. I was just making it a bit more dramatic for fun. But the point is that we kind of thought like, how can we work, you know, in small with, well, okay. Then there's another side to this story where, we really wanted to work with startups, and unfortunately startups don't usually have very big budgets. So the idea here was that we would actually shift our offering. So we started offering like smaller packages to startups. So it was like, we were doing like UX boosters that were like 3 weeks, you know, and like little jumpstart packages that were like a month. And so we started doing that. And it was really cool because what we saw when we were working with these startups was not only were we having a lot more fun, but the outcomes were even better than when we would work on these super long drawn out projects. So it was kind of this really telling phase in AJ and Smart where we realized like, oh, there's something more to this. And then at the same time that was happening, Jake was basically like releasing his book Sprint. So once he released the book, we read the book and we were like, yep, that's what we've basically been getting at for the past, you know, year. Okay. So let's just do that.
For the audience, you mean Jake Knapp.
Jake Knapp. Yes. Sorry. Jake Knapp, the author of Sprint. Yeah.
And I think it's really interesting. So you decided to not take on the bigger projects, but to take on more smaller projects. And did you like calculate it all through so you have to get like a lot of more projects? Or do you make the small projects so expensive that you could like afford to having some slack time between them?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, at first, we definitely didn't make them very expensive. So then it caused actually quite a bit of stress when it came to actually booking clients. And that was definitely a difficult time. The thing that happened though was, once we really decided to go all in on the design sprint, we kind of made ourselves the experts in that process. So we really doubled down on making sure that if someone was looking for the design sprint, that they would kind of find us very quickly. And we made sure that we really made a lot of video content. We were like very like heavy into social media. And so it was a very strategic move that we actually went for that. And that way we were actually able to charge quite a bit more for our sprints. So the prices have gone up drastically since we started offering sprints. And now they're at this point where we don't need to stress too much about having a sprint every single week. Although it's, you know, we are booked quite comfortably. So
you have more to do than you can do.
Yeah, at this point, yes, which is really great. Yeah,
which is very success.
Lucky. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so what exactly were the patterns you discovered when you transitioned for the second time, where you decided that you would attack the niche for become the agency for design sprints?
Some patterns. Yeah, that's a good, this is okay. So I would say you have to think about it from maybe two perspectives. So you have the designer's, you know, perspective. So like our agency, the people who work for us, and then there's the client perspective. So I would say that some patterns for us, as far as being on sprints every week and not actually going through the process of actually developing a product and seeing it launch, that was something that really was difficult for a lot of people. I mean, there's something to be said for having this like 1 week project and then finishing it and being like, hurrah, we're done, let's move on. But there's also a great thing. There's like something really powerful about working on something for like an extended period of time, having it launch, and then having that like satisfaction that you really did something, you completed something big. And that is one thing that we, you know, we're working on that right now with a lot of our, you know, with AJ and Smart, with our team, because it is something that, you know, a lot of people miss. So we often kind of try to incorporate that on an internal basis. So we'll maybe work on a project, you know, within AJ and Smart, we'll work on developing some kind of a product or service. And that kind of sort of fills that gap. So I'd say that's from the designer side. That was probably the biggest like transition or, you know, something to get used to. From the client side, it's almost the same just from their perspective. So when you sell a client a sprint and then you tell them, okay, we were going to work super intensely on your product for 1 week or 2 weeks, if they're doing the iteration sprint, which is a whole nother bag of worms. But so, you know, you can say to them, like, we're going to work really intensely. Everybody's like all hands on deck for 1 week. And then after that week, we're like, okay, that's it. See you later. Right. Like we're, you know, we're not involved anymore. And I mean, not that that is how we treated our clients. Obviously there's like, we have like follow-up calls with them and we do things like that, but it's hard to explain to clients the value that we can offer by helping them get started, right? By giving them that boost. And you have to make it very clear. We've only just recently realized that we need to stop marketing ourselves as, you know, like we need to stop saying like, oh yeah, we're going to do this and that and the next thing. And we have to just stick to, we're going to help you get started and we're going to do it really, really, really well. And then you're going to move on and you'll have to find another agency to help you actually, you know, see that idea through, but we're really going to focus in for that period of time.
I love this because it really limits your circle of concerns, what you want yes. to be good at, and really to say, okay, no, that's not what we are here for. We're not here to launch the ship. It's because we want to help you start it.
Yeah.
I think
yeah.
it's...
Absolutely. And that's something that our clients are responding really well to. So I'm being serious, like literally a few weeks ago, we decided we needed to just change the way we talk about ourselves. And I mean, we're also we're pretty young. I mean, we're seven years old. So we don't really even have like an actual set of like company values. So those kinds of things, when you're like just worried about getting started and making it happen, those things kind of fall, you know, by the wayside.
Don't do it.
Don't write your values down.
No, I know that you think it's better not to have values, but I promise it's important. And I'm not saying that you need to have like ridiculous, you know, whatever, but just things so that people in a company know what's important and like what's most important to this company.
Yeah, I see your point. But from our perspective, our standpoint is that you can't create values you live by, but you are living your values and then you can discover them.
Yeah, that's a good point. No, that's a really good point. And I think that's why it's taken us so long to actually get around to doing it, because we didn't know who we were or what we were for a long time. But now we have a pretty good idea. So
do you have any principles you work with by?
Personally or at AJ and Smart?
At AJ and Smart.
So it would be like, getting started is more important than being right. That's like probably our biggest one. So we talk about that all the time. Like everybody here absolutely hates any kind of like circular discussion, any kind of like arguing over small details. It's like, let's just choose a path. Let's go down that path. And if it fails, then we figure out, you know, as it fails, we'll figure out what to do next. But I would say that is like our biggest principle. Another one, and these are all, it's kind of funny. I mean, these are also principles of the design sprint. So okay. They sort of transcended into AJ and Smart as well. But another one is like doing like, I mean, you guys probably know it, like tangible over discussion. So whenever you're talking about something or you're trying to prove a point, we always make sure that we're like showing something instead of just telling, right? Because everything can get lost in translation quite quickly in that regard. So
Do you have Boeing meetings?
We don't really have that many meetings, I have to say.
So crazy. Sounds like if someone, so there are these meetings where you don't get really to the point what you wanted to talk about, and sometimes your head turns off and you think, why am I sitting here?
Yeah.
I love to be in a room with people who always say, why are we doing this meeting? Should we leave or should we focus?
Yeah.
It sounds like you're pretty good at this.
Do you guys, go ahead.
No, you go.
I was just going to ask if you like time box meetings ever, or do you? Yeah, you do.
Yeah, we do. Right now, I'm at my current client where I'm based at. They have like a quadrillion of meetings.
Oh,
that's no. So crazy. Well, it's a whole department, but like the two teams I work with as a Scrum Master, they are also parts of other teams. So they have like multiple Scrum meetings at a week and some additional meetings and the meeting about the meeting and the follow-up meeting. And it's like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Please, for your own good, please stop and please take a look at what you're doing and get a step back and just breathe, please.
Yeah. And I think what's really inspiring, if we like now take Agent Smart transition phase to use like the internet and be able to really communicate well that you want to do small things, I think you could now say, okay, let's do a consultancy agency only for how to do meetings properly.
Yeah.
It's a really small step, but everyone hates ineffective meetings.
Yeah. Have you ever tried doing a meeting with Lightning Decision Jam?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah? How did it go?
Yeah, I tried it in a retrospective.
Ah, nice.
Multiple times, and it was like, it was an experiment.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't say it failed, but it was very complicated, and the attendees didn't get the point of the Lightning Decision Jams. So, because maybe they were not used to do retrospectives, I started it very early in their process of transcending into an agile team.
Yeah.
And maybe that was a little bit too much for them.
What's maybe valuable for the listeners of this podcast and for me now, what is the Lightning Decision Jam? I don't know it.
Ah, of course. Sorry. So the Lightning Decision Jam was actually invented by AJ and Smart. And it's basically a tool that we use basically to replace all of our meetings. And we, it's a short like exercise. It can be anywhere from 45 minutes to an hour and a half. And it's, if you're ever like in a room with a bunch of people in a meeting, or you just need to make a decision, this is the exercise to use. And we pitch it also like it's really good for retrospectives. So when you can like get together with your team after anything, after a project, after an event, after, you know, absolutely anything going on where you want to kind of reflect on what happened. And you can actually go through this exercise, get all the feedback from people, and then come up with actionable steps like within this, you know, 45 minutes to improve or to go forward. So it's a, you know, there's post-its involved and dots.
There's post-its. What's really interesting for me now, can you talk about the details, how this works? Or is this something that you sell as an agency?
So we do actually, like we go to like something like the Lightning Decision Jam. We've used with Lego quite a few times. We've actually used it with their C-level staff to basically come up with like strategy sessions and like,
cool.
Was like pretty high level stuff, which is quite cool. And they were so excited about it that they've invited us kind of back again to do it with them. So basically the idea is there's like several steps. We have a YouTube video that describes it super simply. We have a little booklet.
Well,
so like maybe there's one on
the YouTube video is very funny to look at.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah. Oh, good. So the YouTube video hopefully is fun while you're actually learning how to do it. We have like a booklet. We don't necessarily like we sell it, but it's more that we sell us facilitating it. So we give it away. Like everybody can learn how to do it themselves. It's very, very simple. But if you want someone to come in and facilitate it and actually like moderate the session, if it's involving like strategy or, you know, product or whatever, then we do sell that. So.
Okay, because that's a topic like I get really down in the last weeks that so many people think that putting your wisdom or your knowledge on the internet for free is the same as being coaching the wisdom, and it's a completely different thing in my opinion.
Yes.
So I like this, that you say, okay, we're putting the knowledge how to do the message for free on the internet, but we are the best at actually performing it. So if you want the best, you have to hire us for us. I think that's a really smart, move.
I think as well that if you say that coaching is the same like teaching how you can do it, you missed the point that coaching is very, very close to the people you're working with. Well, on the other side, if you are providing a video or content for free where you can teach yourself how to do it, there's like this distance between the coach and the coachee. So yeah. There's no real human connection between them.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah. It's it is a funny thing that this mindset of like, don't give away your secrets, you know, like, oh gosh, you got to make sure that you leave something so that you can still sell yourself somehow, right? But the absolute opposite is true in my experience. So the more that we put out about what we know, what we do, you know, who we are, the processes that we use, literally we'll give step-by-step videos of how we work with our clients, the more stuff like that we put out, the more clients we have coming in. Because you're positioning yourself as the expert, right? Like people are seeing that, oh, this person clearly knows what they're talking about. And there's also this kind of like little trick side of it where it's like, they're like, oh, this is, if they're giving me all of this information, can you imagine what I'm going to get if I hire them? Which, you know, is kind of true, sort of, but, and it's also on another token, sorry, I'm just talking so much, but on another side of it is like, it pushes you as well, like us as an agency, the fact that we're putting out so much stuff about what we do and how we do it means that we need to continue to learn and continue to get better and, you know, just get better at our craft. And that is also a cool thing.
So, and because you have this, like this high frequency of publishing your content, you have to learn faster, or you are able to learn faster because you are always shipping like in a very high velocity.
Exactly. So
quite very interesting. Well, if I look at big companies, like those big like bureaucracies, they are so slow, except maybe of Google and Amazon and Zalando or so.
They're getting slow.
Yeah, they are getting slow, and they learn very, very slow because they need so much time to ship any products or services.
Yeah, totally.
I love that feels a little bit like eat your own dog food. So you are breathing the design system principles and you're living by it. And so, and actually to see the content strategy of you having, it's the same principles too. It's not about the content. It's about learning what the content does and then doing the better content next time.
Yes, exactly.
Feels awesome. One point to this transparency thing and just sharing what you knew. And I have to do a little bit. I'm advertising for myself. I'm actually right now pushing this to the next level. I'm live streaming what I'm working.
Oh, so, cool.
And how I'm working. It's in a small experiment, but this makes me nervous because people are watching how I'm working. But this is the same thing. I position myself as the expert that I'm good at it. And
that's really cool. So how often are you doing that? How often are you live streaming?
Oh, daily.
And like for an hour or some at a time?
Yeah, it's just about 3 or 4 hours daily. But it's like right now a pleasure project, not with real clients, because I don't want to get in the hassle of working with like big companies and asking them if it can be transparent. But I'm only working with like locals who are like doing their own thing, like starting small things or starting their freelance careers.
Right. Okay, that's really cool. Good luck.
Thank you so much. And that's to the point, share what you really know. So, and then get people towards you and to hire you because you're the expert on this topic.
Yeah. And I mean, one thing that's difficult, obviously, like that's probably so nerve-wracking, you know, live streaming your work and your process. And the thing about it, I think that would stop a lot of people from doing that is that fear that someone will be watching and will think like, oh, I'm better than this person. You know, like, you know, why would I, right? Like there's this kind of like imposter and you feel like, oh God, I'm just pretending to be good at what I'm doing. I don't know if I'm actually, and that is such a cool way to combat that, to just like hit it head on and be like, I'm just going to friggin' live stream my work. It's great. I love it.
Yeah.
Really cool.
So I forgot my question.
Okay.
So we have like a little bit the past. Yeah, what is Adrian Smart? What is Adrian Smart doing? What is currently on today? You talked a little bit about Lego. I think Lego is one of this Spotify like. Oh, this we have to copy this business model because it's working so well.
Oh, yeah. I hate it so much.
Yeah.
When companies think it's a very good idea to implement Scrum as a production company
because it works for everyone else.
Do our steel production in sprints. The fuck?
I know.
What was the phrase? You can't copy the endpoint of a journey from someone else.
Yeah. Exactly. That's such a valuable lesson to learn, I think. Yeah.
So, and what's like your daily business today?
So AJ and Smart right now, we're running sprints on a kind of weekly basis, but I said before I mentioned iteration sprints. So what we're doing is we sell a company a kind of a small package. So it's like a 2-week design sprint, let's say. But this 2 weeks kind of is broken up by one sort of regular 4-day sprint. So that's like we've reduced the amount of days in the sprint to 4 days. So it's 1 week of that. And then the next week is actually an iteration on what we found out from the user tests from the first week of the sprint. So what's really cool is that, you know, before it was always something about the sprint that maybe a lot of people just don't know is that this design sprint doesn't guarantee a great result, right? Like the whole idea of the design sprint is actually just to get user feedback to figure out if this big idea you have is worth pursuing. So quite often after you do a design sprint, you might find out that, whoops, this idea is actual total bullshit and we definitely shouldn't be building this. And that's very disheartening, obviously, especially if it's something, you know, either you or a client is super passionate and excited about, that can be really tough to kind of recover from. So to combat that, what we've done is we've tacked on this iteration sprint so that anything we learn, even if we learn that like, ooh, the customer really didn't like this, but here's why they didn't like this. So we can actually take those findings and in the next week get much closer to something that would be interesting for the user.
With customer, you mean the customer of your client?
Right. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, maybe, okay. Yeah, I'll say customer and user, just to keep
all right, it. Okay.
Yeah, so, okay. Simple. So we're offering that to our clients. We're also doing design sprint trainings. So these are like super intense 2-day training events where people either come to us or we go to them. We're selling them like publicly. So we'll sell like individual tickets, but then there's also an option where companies can actually buy their employees a training. So then we would go to that company and train them on how to, not only how to run the design sprint, but also like how to incorporate it into their workflows, like when they should sprint, how can they facilitate that? How can they kind of bridge the gap between that, the company culture and then design sprints, which are just so different from a lot of, you know, the ways that people are working. And the clients that we're working with are not startups, you know, for like, you know, we're working with like really big companies. And a lot of them, like something like Lufthansa, are quite established and they've been around for a long time. They have their certain processes.
That's a nice way to put it.
Yeah. Established. Yeah.
And how is this working on? So are they also talking about products? Do they want to have the design sprints to test products or they want to do, this is kind of, this is a fancy idea. We want to know it.
Yeah. So it's, I guess it's probably a bit of both. The thing about, the design sprint that I think a lot of people are hung up on is that, that it's only for digital products and it's just not true. Like we do design sprints for organizational change. We do them for like,
cool.
Yes. Yeah. I'm glad you're so excited about it. That's cool. For like services as well. I mean, one design sprint we did with Lufthansa, this was years ago, but we helped them. They had this project where they were like, okay, we have all of these kids wanting to travel, right? And parents wanting their kids to be able to travel without them, but also to feel safe, right? That their kids are going to get to their destination and everything's going to be fine. And they wanted a way to make this better because they had these things that go around the kids' necks, right? like these really big things that basically were really uncool. And it was, you know, it highlighted the fact that they were traveling by themselves and kids didn't like wearing them. So they would just like take them off and, you know, right. And that's kind of defeats the whole purpose. So we kind of worked with them to figure out what is a new way that we could, you know, work this out. What other ways could we make parents feel comfortable that their child can go on a Lufthansa flight and arrive safely and they, you know, whatever. So like those kinds of things as well. And then we actually to test it, we literally like tested it in an airport scenario. So it was, I mean, it's a little bit more complicated, but it's kind of cool when you really think about it, you can do a design sprint on almost anything.
Do we want to get into the details of a design sprint?
Yeah.
So from what I recall, it's and I want to get to one point. I think it's really awesome that you say, okay, we are so good at this. We are not doing this in 5 days, but in 4 days. Mm-hmm. Because usually if companies are got something, they extend it and say, no, this is not our 1 week course, this is our 3 week course. Now you're saying you're doing it in 4 days.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. Okay. So the design sprint in its like original form, which was Jake Knapp's, you know, book that he wrote called Sprint, how to test big ideas in only 5 days, I think it was called exactly. And basically what the whole idea was, you go from having a challenge, problem, even just an idea for a solution. And you go from that to a user tested prototype in 5 days. And the whole idea is to get feedback as soon as possible so that you're able to build something quickly, but also able to figure out if there's even a need or want for what you're thinking you're going to put out in the world. So it's about doing it as fast as possible so that you're cutting down time that you're spending, like not only money, but also time that you're spending building these things that nobody even wants. So that's the kind of the idea from it. When we started doing it, we were doing the 5 day sprint, we were doing it all. And we just found that there were some things that we could kind of cut down on. And there were a few exercises where we thought, if we do it like this, I bet it might be a bit simpler or take less time. And probably, you know, so we were kind of like always workshopping the design sprint to try to figure out how best to do it. And then we, you know, came up with this 4 day sprint. Basically, the whole idea is that day one and day two become one day. So that those both kind of combined into day one. So you're actually sketching on the first day. And then, you know, day two is when you make the decision and you do the storyboard. So you storyboard what the prototype's going to be like. And then day three is the prototyping day and day four is the testing day. And that's it.
When
that wasn't true.
Yeah. Okay. So this is the design sprint, and it was originally designed to go into startups and help test products. Now you're doing it with big companies. I want to ask a question. One, not to do the design sprint. Do you have a scenario where you tell your customer or your client, no, that's not the right method. You need something else, but we are not the right persons for it. Is there something like this?
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot of reasons when you shouldn't do a design sprint. And this is a very common question we get asked all the time. So I think the first thing to think about is, can somebody make this decision and solve this problem using like things we already know, right? Like knowledge they already have or knowledge that is accessible. So when it comes to like improving the navigation of a product, I mean, you don't need to do a design sprint on that because there's like common proven ways to improve the navigation of a product. There's no need to dive deeper into that. The reason to do a design sprint is like the biggest thing is when you have something, a challenge, a decision is needed to be like, you need to make a decision, but you're unable to. But not only that is you need the perspectives from several people, from several parts of the business. I think that's like the biggest thing is like, it would be valuable for you to have the perspective of marketing or sales or, you know, whatever else it is, like even legal or something, right? That's the reason to do a design sprint because, or else let's say you build something, you know, your design team comes together, you guys come up with this really great idea, you build something and then you go to, you know, release it or get it approved. And the legal team's like, well, we can't do this. Like it's illegal, you know? And then you're like, shit. And then you've got yourself a problem, right? You've just wasted time, money, resources, and it's just, you're back at square one. So I think that that is something that people need to think about. Like, it's just, and a design sprint is not for every time, you know, it's not for, like, you should not be design sprinting every week. And I think that's one thing that people,
I think maybe government has to do some serious business, and they should not maybe try out ideas, but not like decide upon like millions of people's destiny in a week.
Exactly. And the time also to do a design sprint is if, let's say you got a team together, whatever. I mean, this is kind of a similar point, but you want to always have the person who could kind of shoot down the idea. So the person who is either in charge of the product or even like in charge of the business, depending on how big your company is, the person who can be like, nope, I don't like that. You're going to want to have those people in the room, whoever can like shoot it down, whoever can stop it, from going on. That's who you want to have within the design sprint. And you'd be so amazed at how cool it is when you get people in a room together and they've contributed to the idea. It's almost this mindset of like, they feel a part of what's being made. So they're much more excited about it. They're much more just like, yeah, they feel proud of it. And it's quite a cool thing.
So they are sort of aligned towards a common goal.
Yes.
And they are motivated because they see, look at this, I've made it.
It's my baby.
I can identify with my product and I can identify with my users or customers.
Yes.
Do you know the design studio method?
Was it a question towards...
Towards you both?
I don't.
No, me neither.
It's like you start off with your challenge and then everyone on its own starts to scratch something in 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then you present it to your meeting members. And after that, you are allowed to steal from your others. So in the end, you like dig down on... So you start with 6 ideas and then go to 3 ideas. And after the third round, you have like 1 idea. But you're allowed to steal from everyone. That's mostly... aligning the team, not so also like creating like a decision, that's how we wanted to go in this direction, but also aligning the team very well to say, okay, I like this idea and I don't like it. So the obvious thing is we got to a product idea, but the not so obvious unconsciousness deep thing is the team is aligned and feels like the same
with
the design sprint.
Yeah, I like it. So the only problem that I would see with that, or like that I could see coming up, is if you have the people in the room and then everyone presents their idea, do you think there's going to be like a bias to like, okay, that person's a senior, you know, UX person. Yeah. So then now I'm going to incorporate their idea because they probably know what they're talking about. You know, that kind
but
of thing.
That's only the case if you're not fully like aware of that. If you are on a very experienced team where like you have a senior developer, a senior UX layer, and like a junior one, mm-hmm. if everyone knows that there is the senior and there might be a bias because he's the senior, then you can tackle it and can anti-game it.
I don't think so, actually. That's another topic.
Well,
but
I've experienced it by myself.
Okay, but if you have like something like dot voting and the owner of the company is the first one to dot vote it.
So let be...
That's a problem.
Be the one who is voting at least.
Yeah. So to get to the point, I think you have to, in the design sprint, you want to have like people in the room that owns the business and will put this thing down, and they need to know and they need to be part of the decision.
Yes.
Or they need to be part of looking at the results, looking at the user tests.
Exactly.
And
yes.
The design studio thing is more like a team thing.
I mean, with the design sprint 2.0, you really need them in the room for the first 2 days. And then for the day 3 and 4, you actually don't need them in the room. It's cooler and better if they can be. But we also make it possible for like our clients, our customers to watch the user test, you know, and we send them like highlights from the user test. So that's actually another thing that with the, you know, design sprint 2.0, 4-day design sprint, that it's really nice. You know, you actually don't need to take these people's time for longer than 2 days, which is a huge, we didn't even realize how big that was as a selling feature until one client like told us. They're like, well, it was just no brainer. Like, we only have to be in the room for 2 days. And we were like, oh yeah, that is good. Yeah. That was funny.
So what is your typical workflow look like at Adrian Spark?
Well, I mean, we are running design sprints on a weekly basis. So we have, right now we have about like 1.5 sprint teams. So we're kind of like, what happens is the week before a sprint starts, there'll be sort of one person in charge of doing a bit of background research on like the industry, the product, what it's at, what's going on, what the challenges are that the client is facing. And then we'll go into Monday with a 3-person sprint team from our side. So 3 people will be in the sprint, and then there'll be ideally like 3 to 4 from the client side. We really try to keep a sprint team at like 7 to 8 people. That's like the ideal size. So then they go in on Monday morning, and they don't really start cold, obviously, because they've had some like research that happened the week before, but it's very minimal. Actually, the cool thing about the sprint is it's this process that's designed so that you don't actually have to do much of any upfront research, especially if it's your product that you're working on, then you don't really need to do any. But so they go into the sprint, they do the sprint. It's super intense. You're client facing for 2 full days. And then the third day you're prototyping all day, super intense. Then you're user testing. So you're like doing what we're doing, but for like 8 hours, super intense. And then, you'll have the Friday, which is sometimes you'll have spillover from the user test, depending on the, you know, scheduling. But you'll also have a day to sort of reflect on what happened and what the results were, and to kind of come up with a concise way to present it to the client. And then it depends on the package that the client bought, but then the following week you would actually like really work on synthesizing the results even more and delivering a really like extensive executive summary of everything that happened, you know, in the design sprint, and what action steps the client should actually make, you know, in the coming months, and how they should implement, let's say, new features, or even just like a new product, how that should roll out. So we are kind of, there are like several steps to our process, but that's like on a basic level, pretty much it.
So you, at the end of the design sprint, you as Adrian Smart give your client some suggestions what they should do with it?
Yes, definitely. Okay. We do that, like that's a huge part of you know, our offering, is that sort of strategic look at the client's product or their service or whatever, going down the line. So however they incorporate it, whether, you know, they're working in Agile or waterfall, but we sort of show them, we give them a pretty good guide on how they can incorporate what we just worked on so intensely back into their regular workflow.
Okay. Yeah. So, and how do you manage to improve inside Adrian Smart?
So how do we improve?
Do you have like a regular schedule for retrospectives? Do you have other formats? Do you set goals? How do you measure if you are achieving your goals? What metrics do you use?
Yeah, that's a good, I mean, so this is, I'm not going to lie, this is something that we've kind of struggled with over the years. I guess probably a lot of teams have. You know, we went through a phase where we kind of all came up with KPIs, you know, and then we had these check-ins, these really like regulated, you know, quarterly check-ins with the KPIs. And it sort of just fizzled out. It didn't really totally stick. So what we find works best is, like regular retrospectives. So the sprint team will do retrospectives basically after each sprint. So whether that's a 1-week sprint or maybe it's a 2-week sprint, but they will do that like after every client. And then all the other teams in the business as well. So they'll do that almost like, yeah, usually we do it like every, like a monthly thing is sort of the standard. We also do monthly town halls where we all kind of gather and talk about what's going on in the business, what's going well, what's not going well. And we kind of align that way. I mean, we're a company of 20 people, so we're quite small. So we're lucky that we're able to do that. We can do it monthly. We can all sit down, have a nice breakfast, and just like, yeah, everybody, kind of all the heads of the departments will present what's going on in sort of their circle. And yeah, usually before that, everybody's sort of prompted to do a nice little retrospective, you know?
Okay. So basically you're sharing stories about what went well and what went bad. You're not you're not looking at specific numbers or...
Yeah, so here's the thing. I mean, it's kind of difficult for us to really measure our success in a, you know, we're not seeing products launch, right? We're not on like specific timelines where we need to get, you know, a certain amount of work done. And it's like, we have a quite a specific timeline and it's 1 week, right? So, that's interesting. Yeah. People ask us a lot, like, how do you measure the success of a design sprint? Or have you ever gone back to look at, you know, whether or not your clients are, how they're doing and those kinds of things. And we're really focused on getting our clients started. And we have yet to really establish a system of like, okay, you know, this many clients came to do the design sprint and out of those, you know, this amount actually launched the thing that we worked on or whatever it is. For us, it's just not as important because the important thing about what we do is that our clients are learning and that they're feeling like they're getting aligned and they're making decisions. And, you know, like, yeah, we've sort of taken ourselves out of the equation when it comes to them actually like launching things. But the other thing to think about when we're talking about like reflecting or measuring, like we do always have like our clients do like a survey after they do a design sprint with us or a training. They're always answering these kinds of questions. So we make sure that they're like as happy as possible.
One thing you could do, and I only think things you could, is mm-hmm. like having like your freelancer personal network where you know who's exactly capable of doing what. And so if you find out at one client that he's struggling with a specific problem and you know exactly that you have like two persons in Berlin that are like brilliant at solving this problem, you could rent them to him.
And
so... it's going a little bit into the direction of personal marketing, and I hate this industry, but this would be more upfront and honest and personal to say, oh, wow, we figured out you're having this problem. Actually, we know someone who could help you if you don't have the persons on your own. Just want to say you could.
Yeah, we could. The other thing, though, like it's difficult because like we've also had a lot of people, agencies approach us wanting to partner with us, right? Wanting to be like, we'll be your development agency, right? Like we'll take all the you know clients from you after they're just different. Yeah, and we just for us, it's like that's really risky for us, you know, because we know that like development agencies that it gets a bit tricky there. Like deadlines are, you know, an issue and those, like, it's just, we don't necessarily, we'd like to do what we do really well, just smash it out of the park. And then our clients always have a really nice feeling when they think about us or talk about us or, you know, want to come back and do more sprints with us.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Okay, I see. So you're basically strongly, So you are basically you have a problem with or you fear that you will lose your identity if you start to become like this meta agency with partnering with other agencies, so that you lost your core.
Yeah, we have a very strong brand and we don't really want to lose that.
And actually that's way where you're coming from, right?
Yeah.
So I want to ask a question. Has there been some times where everything is going like south, bad mood in the company? But after the whole transition phase to design sprints, so how do your unhappy days look like and what did happen?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, not every design sprint goes perfectly according to plan. Probably the worst one to date would have to be when the client, it was two founders were in the room and basically there was so much animosity between them. Like they were really angry with each other and there were a lot of things like pent up, you know, that were just sort of surfacing. And at some point within day one, like they weren't even sure if they were going to be a company the next day, you know? So things like that, like it's interesting because the design sprint, a lot of people say it feels like for teams, it often feels a bit like a therapy session, you know, because you're getting everything out there. Everybody's kind of, you know, your opinions are flying and things are all happening. And so if you're in a really bad place, it's almost like don't take that drug if you're not in a good place, you know? Yeah. So it can be, that was probably the worst that has ever happened. But the thing about what we do is, especially, I think that things go wrong more often when people don't come to our office, because our office is like, we know where everything is. Everything is set up. We're really relaxed. Clients love our office. It's like, it's a very nice space. Yeah, and they always beautiful. Feel like, they always feel very, you know, excited to be there. Whereas when we go to another space, you never know where we're going to end up doing the design sprint. And usually it's in like a really awful room with no windows. And it's, you know, everybody's like cooped up and like, we're all going crazy together.
Sounds like my everyday day.
Yeah, actually, I think there's a, the cognitive thing to it. So if you're in the usual surroundings, you start to tend to fall into usual patterns. So I think it's also like a cognitive thing to switch locations.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's so much better to come to us.
Well,
or to just have it somewhere nice.
In addition to that, it's also a big point about how your room is stuffed and how it's designed. Like it's like when it looks like a little bit unfinished, you get in the mood like a cognitive mood, like where, okay, this is unfinished. I can try to finish or to create something to get it done.
Totally.
That's a really why good point. That's why all the co-working spaces look like not finished.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it is.
Wow.
Well, I've heard a podcast. I
didn't know that, but that's a really
I think it was sense. On the way to New Work, the podcast from I don't remember the names. It's an online marketing rockstars presented podcast, and they talked to the founder of the design offices.
Oh, yeah.
And he told them in the podcast that this is a real thing.
Oh.
That's why the design offices look like how they look like.
So I now on another topic, I talked with someone who's like owning a cafe, and he knows that there's like a new healthy fast food thing coming up, and they design the tables to be like as uncomfortable as possible so people leave. This is like an obvious
that
thing,
makes
but
sense, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's like known since McDonald's. They did it as well. But to have the same strategy in healthy food now is, I think, was surprising for me. But this also finds traction in something like co-working spaces. It's interesting.
Makes a lot of sense, though.
Looking to the future, where are you heading?
I mean, this is really exciting. I'm like only recently, probably, I think it was June, we released our first online course. And that was basically an online masterclass to learn the design sprint. We released that and it totally blew up. We were not expecting it to be as popular as it was. And now we're actually working on our second course. So we are definitely going to be, you know, releasing a new course in the new year. It's going to be, I don't even know if I can say what it's going to be about, but it will be a little bit more, it's going to be less, it's going to be more interesting for people. It's going to be more high level, let's say.
Okay. I love it. Meta.
High level stuff. Yeah. So we're working on that. We're always changing things with AJ and Smart. You actually just never know what is going to happen in this agency. It's like, we're like new things come up all the time. We're just rolling with the punches. But one thing I will say that is definitely going to happen is we are going to like triple, quadruple down on all of our content stuff. So you'll be seeing a lot more of us. You'll be hearing a lot more from us.
It's already started, is it?
It's definitely on the upswing. Okay. Yeah.
The 4D thing is crawling in.
Yeah, exactly.
I have to dig into it. What was it like for you personally?
Yeah.
With Gary and the whole crew.
It was funny because I thought I would be a little bit more like intimidated by him because I've also been like watching his stuff for a really long time. And I also thought he would kind of be a bit like rude And that sounds so bad, but I really did. I thought he would be kind of like, I know that he's smart and everything, but I thought he would be kind of like abrasive and whatever. I mean, he was definitely very excitable, like, you know, talks a lot, talks really fast. And I'm a fast talker, but he talks extremely fast. But it was for me, I was just actually kind of blown away at how quickly he was able to understand what it is you do. And then second, like, actually give you super tangible advice. I mean, whether or not you take it is one thing, but like what he's like, here's what I would do. Boom. And it's just, and then you're like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And that's like, it was just kind of crazy. And he did that for every single person in the room. Yeah. He spent like 2 hours with us, which was really cool. And it was just like, I mean, it was first of all really weird seeing him in person. He's a lot shorter than I was expecting. You know, I don't know. Like, I know he looks kind of like, but he's quite a small guy. Really polite though, really nice, very intense.
Cool.
Yeah.
So,
Future. I was talking about the future.
Sorry, I hijacked your question. Like always.
I have to add one thing. I watched a YouTube video from him from like, I think 2014 or something, like 4 years ago. And he was rude back then. I think he's actually calming down, getting more polite.
I think so as well.
I think he was really
content. He was like,
yeah, and in the face and rude to everyone. And he's like really positive.
Yeah, he's changing maybe. Yeah. That's interesting.
Okay.
Except of all his parenting stuff, there's the... He found a new rage topic.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're kind of trying to get more hang of the whole you can be also digitally teaching people and trying to get into this direction.
Sorry. I'm listening. Sorry, I'm just looking for my... I'm running out of battery life here.
That's fine because...
I should be good for a bit.
Because that's fine because we actually hit 1 hour. We plan to do like 45 minutes. So
every goddamn time.
This chatterbox over here, it's my fault. I'm sorry.
No, it's totally fine.
Pretty awesome, actually. There's a point in each episode where we ask our interview audience. Partners, what could we do for you?
What can our audience do for you?
Oh, that's so cool that you do that. Very interesting. Okay, so I think that, what could you do? I think that the one thing you could probably do is try replacing a meeting with a lightning decision jam and see what happens. You can find lightning decision jam on our YouTube channel. It's just AJ and Smart. And you can like see the whole thing there, but I just would urge you, that would help me out and AJ and Smart. Well, would help out our cause.
I mean more practical, like what can we do for AJ and Smart? Are you looking for like an office manager? Are you looking for people who watch your course? I mean really for the company in a practical way.
Okay, well, I guess we're always our YouTube channel and our Instagram. I would say follow both of those. That would be amazing.
Okay.
All right.
Awesome.
Easy.
I've got a question, but where is it? It's gone. Damn it. All these questions in my head.
I'm sure you can follow up to Brittany.
Yeah.
Yes. Email me with the question.
No. So as I tried out the Lightning Decision Jam for I think 2 times with 2 different teams, I've got like the same feedback about
okay.
it. So it's regarding the last 2 exercises. Can you shortly describe them?
The last 2 exercises. So is this
like the impact?
The 3 steps: effort, impact. Okay.
Yes,
yeah.
in the one after that.
And that? So put placing the effort, impact, and then choosing and creating 3 steps to test. Is that it?
No. What was before the impact and effort? It was stop voting and then impact and effort and then a bit. Okay, all right. So the feedback was it's a little bit redundant that you first dot vote the most urgent topics and then you have to prioritize it by impact and effort.
Right. Okay. That makes sense. That's a good question. So, here's the thing. Sometimes what you think is going to be a really good idea. So what you might've dot voted on, you put your dots on there because it's an excellent idea and it's super, it might actually take a lot of effort and therefore shouldn't necessarily be the first thing you try as a solution to the issue. So it's about actually figuring out what is going to be the easiest thing that's going to have the most impact to start, right? And then, so if something is going to have a lot of impact, but is going to be really high effort, you can make that into a project and you can actually tackle that like kind of, you know, down the line, whatever, but yeah, with a design sprint. Exactly. But whereas if you have this, this solution that is, you know, like super easy to do, and it looks like it's actually going to have a pretty decent impact, like why not start there? Like why create more work for yourself? So that's why we do the effort impact scale. That's the basis behind it.
Okay. So did you also get this feedback?
No, actually, I've never had anybody say that. I've had people find using the effort impact scale difficult because they're like, well, what do you mean by effort? Like, are we talking about like monetary effort, time effort? Those are the things that people often bring up. And we're always like, just effort in general. You know?
Effort.
Funny. I didn't get this feedback.
Maybe you will soon.
I've been once in a company where we were at the point where we could just throw money at problems. For example, we have like a Heroku thing, and we just need more like nodes running on something.
Yeah.
And one developer said I could like try to fix this problem in 2 months, or we like get our credit card and it's $5,000. And the chef was like, the boss was like,
perfect.
Go the money way.
Yeah.
So sometimes effort is money.
Yeah,
for some people it's not.
Well, but exactly. I think if you throw money on a problem, it's like the short term solution about a problem. It's not like understanding the problem really, really well and dig deep into the source and into the core of the problem.
Yeah. I disagree.
Do
because
you?
we are paying for like things like Slack.
Yeah.
And we will never ever create our own.
No.
Yeah.
So it's if it is something is commodity, I agree. If something is like really custom, tangible, custom made, you maybe want to get to the hang of it. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Cool. Thanks, guys. This has been really fun.
Yeah,
okay.
Thank you.
Brittany from AGN Smart, thanks so much for having us, for talking to us.
Thank you.
For everyone, please follow everything that's is remotely to do with AGN Smart.
And Brittany's stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You can follow my Instagram at Brittany Bao.
Awesome.
Yeah. Or okay. Brittany Bao or whatever.
We put it in the show notes.
Cool. Perfect.
And on Instagram and everywhere else where we are.
Okay. Thank you so much.
The whole world. Okay. Right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.